Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. It's an absolute pleasure to head to the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline as we get to say hello to our friend Damon Amendolara. He's DA on CBS Sports Radio. He does the morning show from 6 until 10. And, of course, you can always find everything that he covers on the air on podcast or through his fantastic Twitter account, DA on CBS. But, Damon, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Happy to say thumbs up, and everything right now is staying on track for the SEC to kick off as expected a week from Saturday. And it had to be an extra ray of sunshine for you this morning when you got to catch up with VFL Charles Davis. What was that like?
Oh, it's the best. Charles Davis is just one of the best guys in the business, not only because he's supremely talented in terms of communicating an idea, a concept, some kind of extensive football stuff for the common person as well, but he's really researched, and he's just a great guy. In fact, Charles Davis was the connection that I had to come down and see a Vols game and get to go inside kind of the bowels of the stadium and go see some of the facilities and see the practice facility and the locker rooms. It was because of Charles's hookup. He knows everybody, as you might imagine. Everybody loves him. There's not a bad word to be said about Charles, so I always love having him on the show. And we talked a lot of NFL and what went down in week number one and stuff about Tom Brady and stuff about Drew Brees and stuff about the Browns. So I just love when we get to catch up.
How cool was it to see as much college football as we saw this past Saturday as well, wrapped and sandwiched in and around week one of the NFL?
Yeah, it was great. If you're a college football fan such as myself, you know, coming down the home stretch of the summer, everything was such an unknown, and I guess in some ways it's still an unknown, but just seeing the college football stadiums opened up and the teams on the field and competing, that was cool. It was good to see, and it's not the same without the fans, obviously. The fans and the bands and the pageantry is what makes college football so beautiful and so wonderful, but I'll take it. I think we'll all take it. As long as the teams are playing on the field, it's definitely a win.
Damon, I wanted to ask you about the Big Ten resuming play. Hopefully they will get going, as they said, October 23-24 that weekend. Your thoughts on the Big Ten getting back on the field?
Well, when they made their decision a little over a month ago, I did not agree with it, and not because I disagreed with whatever their science decision was, whatever their input was, whatever their decision-making was. That was fine. I just thought the timing was incorrect, because if you had the ACC and the SEC and the Big 12 steamrolling ahead, and they were at the very least going to say, we're going to wait to pull the plug, pulling the plug on the season should have been the last decision you make on the season. And I understand that the Big 10 had reservations about testing and about keeping the kids safe, and I think we can all agree that's got to be the priority. So if you felt like you couldn't do it, every one of us, I would think, could understand canceling the season, but there was no reason to do that in August. I said at the time, and I hold steady to this, if you were one of these major conferences on August the 1st, you don't have to make that call. You just say, we'll reassess September 1st. We'll reassess September 15th. We'll reassess October 1st. Because as we see, you could kick off the season with any one of these conferences up until late October. That's what the Big Ten is doing. So there was absolutely no reason to jump before you had to do that. That needed to be the last decision you make on the season. Don't allow the time to expire where you could reverse course and then have to, you know, pick up your own pieces and have dealt with the fallout and dealt with the parents. So the Big Ten coming back to play football, great. I just think that there was no reason for them to do it so early to have to reverse course and then kind of pick up the pieces today.
Now, what's interesting is that Ohio State cornerback Sean Wade is undecided about playing. He said he has an agent, but he hasn't signed anything. And then a Michigan quarterback, Dylan McCaffrey, has opted out. So do you think there'll be a number of players from the Big Ten that opt out even though they've been cleared to play?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think that you're going to see, and we've seen some players in the SEC, some players at LSU, know that if they've got a relatively high round grade, then why risk whatever is going to happen for college football this year? Now, I don't want to judge these players protecting their own health, because I understand it. Look, this is their investment in their future. This is their investment in their careers. if they've got a high round grade right now for the NFL, a first or a second round, are you really going to come back and risk whatever might take place this year to where you could slide? But what's interesting to me about this is that if you're worried about COVID, or you're worried about testing, or you're worried about just all the stuff that goes into the unknown about, you know, right now college football, I get it. If you're just worried about injury, that's a different thing, because now we're not talking about playing spring football. If you were going to say, okay, we're going to play a spring season, and then you're going to turn around and try to play an NFL season in the fall, hey, I get it. You don't want to try to put your body through that in year number one of your NFL career. But if it's just worried about injury now, well, I mean, then that could go for any other season. So I do think you're going to see players opt out, although, you know, I think that there's less and less reason to do so if you're going to play a football season in the fall and wrap it up when it's normally going to be wrapped up, which is basically late December.
What was it like? How weird is that feeling still lingering out there that Notre Dame won an ACC conference game against Duke?
Oh, isn't this just sweet? Isn't this just amazing? Notre Dame, which has held its nose at all of us peons in conferences for 100 years. Oh, we're too good for that. We don't need a conference. We've got our own television deal. You guys just play down the road. We'll do our own thing. Has to suddenly come back to a conference. They have to suddenly paint that ACC on the field. They've got to be down in the sewers with the rest of us, right? The peasants that have to play in the conferences. So it's so nice to see Notre Dame have to take it on the chin. They've got to play with us now. It's so nice.
And tell me, in future negotiations, should the Sun Belt, or a.k.a. the Fun Belt, demand home-and-home series with Big 12 teams?
I'm telling you, at this point, the Big 12 should have to travel to the Sun Belt. That was the most embarrassing weekend possible for the Big 12. I mean, not only does Iowa State as a ranked team lose at home, that's embarrassing enough, but then you have K-State losing at home as well. And then you have Kansas, who not only gets beat by Coastal Carolina, Coastal Carolina whooped them. I mean, that was a blowout win over Kansas. So, I mean, the Big 12 might want to rethink having come back to play. They might want to find another excuse to just be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe spring football, maybe no football this year, because outside of Oklahoma and Texas, we're just going to give them a waiver. They play, and the rest of us are just going to shut down for the time being.
Hey, players can opt out. Maybe teams can opt out.
Yeah. Well, Les Miles might want to opt out right now. Yeah, but Kansas, they might need the Sun Belt one day to actually invite them in.
So many folks in the NFL were looking forward to see what Tom Brady would do with the Bucs. It was not a rousing debut at all. Do you expect Brady and the Bucs to be much better offensively going forward?
I do think they'll be better, but I do think there's going to be pockets in the season, maybe long stretches, where Tom Brady looks his age. I just don't think you can expect at 43 years old Brady to look like he did at 40 or at 38, and I think some people came into the season doing that. Tom Brady keeps himself in such amazing shape. He's never really had a big drop-off, and so we just kind of assume that he'll look like this forever, and Brady's done a great job kind of cultivating that brand. But inevitably, it comes to an end. I don't think the final game we ever see Tom Brady play is going to throw for 380 yards and 4 touchdowns. I think the final game that we see him play will probably make him look like he's pretty mediocre, kind of like he did in the wild card game last year. So we've got to remember that that's a really good opponent. We've got to remember it was week one after kind of a slipshod offseason. We've got to remember that he's learning a new offense with new targets, and that is a factor. But I would not be surprised if there are games like we saw last week against the Saints that keep popping up throughout the season. I don't think they'll be the majority of games, but I think over the course of 16 weeks, I think you'll see 5 or 6 games this year where you go, boy, yeah, Tom Brady's looking 43, because why wouldn't he? This is uncharted territory, and even Tom Brady at some point is going to show that.
What did you think of Ben Roethlisberger's season opener against the Giants?
That's a really good win for Ben Roethlisberger personally. For the Steelers, you know, the Giants are bad. The Steelers are much better than the Giants. It wasn't a pretty game. The Steelers kind of come out with a workmanlike victory on Monday night. But I thought for Ben Roethlisberger, coming off a career-threatening elbow injury, to come back and just have a couple of throws that he looked in rhythm. It looked like it all kind of came back to him like riding a bike. to me, I just said, okay, that's just what you wanted to see. He threw for 3 touchdowns, no INTs, no really bad decisions, no bad plays. And, you know, there was a play where he was backing up from the pass rush and kind of off balance a little bit. He kind of flicked his pass into the corner of the end zone and led his receiver beautifully for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's all you need to see from Roethlisberger. He wasn't overthinking it. It was just kind of reactionary. He had done it 1,000 times before, and he could summit it and do it again. And the fact that he didn't overthink it, and he wasn't worried, and he wasn't kind of skittish in the pocket, and that he could still make that throw kind of easily, fluidly, I thought was a really good win. And we got to remember, the Steelers went 8-8 last year with no quarterback under center. I mean, Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph were awful. They looked like they played for Kansas. So to me, if you could, you know, if you could get, you know, even 75% of what Roethlisberger used to be, that's a huge win for the Steelers.
Our guest, Damon Amendolara, DA on CBS, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. Tell me this, how long is it going to take the Clippers to pick up the pieces from blowing a 3-1 lead against the Nuggets and coming up short once again when it comes to getting to the Western Conference Finals?
Well, I think emotionally and mentally, that's a tough one to get over because you're up 3-1 all season long. It was about the battle for L.A. and beating the Lakers. You're watching the Lakers wait for you, and you have three cracks at it. And one of the most clutch playoff performers in recent memory with Kawhi Leonard, maybe ever, and you blow all three, and then the last one's the worst one. You don't even lose on a buzzer beater. You lose in a whitewash. And so I think for the Clippers, there's, number one, a mental hurdle here that the Clippers organization has never gotten over that. They've never gotten to a conference final. But number two, this has got to work in year number two, because even though they've acquired Kawhi and Paul George and sold the franchise to do so, it's only a 2-year deal for those guys, and they can opt out after next season. So now you're down to one chance to at the very least get to an NBA Finals, because anything less than that would be a huge failure. So I think this is a big one. But it's not like there's help coming on the horizon, because you've traded away all of your draft picks over the next couple of years to acquire Kawhi and Paul George. So I thought last night that loss was as bad as that franchise was going to have to handle, because there's just not a lot of room now to do anything but, you know, press reset, and we're going to go after it again next year, and you've then got to do it next year because all the pressure's on you.
I liked how you phrased it yesterday on Twitter, and that is you're up for Major League Baseball in a bubble as long as Commissioner Rob Manfred remains there after the playoffs have come and gone. But what do you think that'll be like with the National League teams playing in AL cities and vice versa?
I get it, but I don't like it. I understand what you have to do, but I don't love it. I mean, part of the beauty of October baseball is the electricity in the ballpark, and every pitch is anticipated. And you have the cold weather that climbs into Yankee Stadium or Wrigley Field, you know, pick your cold weather city that's going to host a big game in October, and you take all of that away. And I understand why you have to do it, and that's because all of the money for baseball, basically, and returning and trying to recoup what they've lost this season comes in October. It's the playoff baseball games that get ratings. It's the playoff baseball games that Fox and Turner really want. And so you've got to protect those. So how do you do it? Well, you create the bubble, because look, the NHL and the NBA have done it, and they've shown if you're inside a bubble, nothing goes wrong. I mean, you know, nobody tests positive. If somebody's trying to sneak a girlfriend in there and does something, you kick them right out right away. And, you know, it's kind of like it's the structure that you need to guarantee things. And right now these leagues are looking for guarantees. So you can guarantee every game will be played. You can guarantee full rosters. You can guarantee that the competitive balance is as normal as possible. But, man, it takes away a lot of juice when the Yankees play the Astros at Petco Park in San Diego. And, you know, just, I don't know. I guess I understand it, but I don't love it.
Completely understand. And since we had you on last, it's such an incredible story. Wanted to get your perspective. There's the incredible sadness of losing a force of nature like Little Mo, a young man who just had such a great approach to being forced to battle cancer, a battle that he lost. But what was it like to see the M.O. in Baltimore for the Ravens be highlighted as Mo, to see him memorialized in the corner of the end zone the way he was? And what does it mean to you to share a special little Mo moment each day with the hopes of just putting a little wind in someone's sails?
Well, number one, I really appreciate you just talking about it, because I think the best thing we can all do is just talk about Mo and talk about what he meant and talk about what he represented. As you said, he was 14 years old. He battled cancer his entire life. He was a regular caller to my show, and he laughed every day. He laughed this infectious laugh. He was so happy about his Ravens and his Orioles, and you would have never known that he was blind and he battling cancer and spending most of his life in a hospital. And when he passed away, I just promised myself that I would never forget that lesson, that attitude is a choice and happiness can be a choice. You just have to wake up every day and find that inspiration. And I just said, I've got to make sure that I keep bringing his name up, because he's such an important person, I think, that the world needs. So when I saw the Baltimore Ravens this weekend paint the MO in Baltimore in the end zone, highlight it gold, I mean, just a my hair stood up on my neck. I just couldn't believe it. It was such a cool gesture, and it's going to be there all season long. And they had his mom, Sanzi, come to the stadium to finish painting it in the end zone. So she was there, and then this amazing fan group in Baltimore bought nearly 600 cutouts of Little Mo to put in the stands. So there's a whole section that's called Mo's Rose, and so he's there with the Ravens. And that, to me, kind of symbolized the best in sports and such a wonderful reminder of how to approach every day. And every day on social media, as you're alluding to on Twitter and on Instagram, I'm trying to post something that makes me smile. And it's in honor of Little Mo, just a feel-good moment is what I've tagged it. And it makes me happy, and I think it's making other people happy. And that's kind of the reason that I think Mo was here to kind of teach us that lesson. So I appreciate you bringing it up. And if anybody wants to follow me for that on Twitter, DA on CBS, or on Instagram, at Damon Amendo, and every day just a hat tip to Little Mo and try to smile.
We really appreciate it. Always, thank you for the time to join us here in Knoxville, and we look forward to catching up with you again in the very near future.
You guys know I love jumping on the show, so anytime you need it, thanks so much. Can't wait for SEC football in a couple weeks. Let's go. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks,
Damon. Damon Amendo-Lorage, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.